left side of the bed. Hey. Open doors for me and you might get some kisses. Don't have a dirty mind, just be a classy guy. Buy me a ring, buy me a ring.
WMFO Medford. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Voicemobile. I'm so happy to be here. It's the weather has changed. It's a little bit, it's a little bit muggy out there, but we'll take it. So there's so many things I have to share with you today. We're going to get started off with some music from my Rebbe Shlomo Kalbach, who's Yahrzeit. Yahrzeit is the day that he passed, is tonight, and it's already his Yahrzeit in Israel, so there have been many things online. Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, who now, even though it's 22 years since he's been Nifter or gone, his influence is influencing people ever more so. There are many commemorations around the world, actually, from Israel to United States to all over in Europe and South Africa. His influence is even greater now than it was when he was alive. The music that he created is sung in synagogues all over the world, and the Torahs that he taught, the stories are being told, and the learnings, his understanding of Hasidus is being shared. It's just a well. And one of the things that I just heard Shlomo Katz, who was giving a lecture and a concert for in commemoration of Shlomo's Yahrzeit, was saying that the thing that amazed him the most about Shlomo, besides everything else that we know him for, was that 10 years after the Holocaust, he could come to America and he could have faith in people and in governments. Just incredible. And I thought that was very interesting that he said that he could believe that things would, in fact, be okay. So, you know, with everything that's going on with the aftermath of the election, whatever side you stand on, people are, I think, are overreacting. I know there are serious concerns, and I, you know, God bless those people who have fears. They, you know, hopefully shouldn't be afraid. But, you know, the man was elected in a democracy, and the rioting really just blows my mind. This is, I don't think, how you behave. Quiet, calm, nonviolent, that I can understand. But the violence and the attacks on people on either side is absolutely, to my way of thinking, unacceptable. I mean, Trump himself said to his followers, stop it. And I hope that people will start to wake up and realize we are one country and we need to figure out how to get along with each other. I mean, my goodness. I don't know. That's my little take on things. And work in a peaceful way towards your goals. You know, whether it's immigration or women's issues or the climate change, all of which, you know, have their place. So, you know, that's really not the way to go about it, I don't think. So that's just my two cents. All right, let's see. I've got to reconfigure this board again because, once again, it's not how I want it. Let's see. Okay, I think that might work. Let's do this. And it's happening. Okay, good. Okay, so we now have CDs instead of microphones, which is exactly what I want.
Dari Dari
da 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 da. So much sweetest friends, everyone in the world heard of the Koznitz the Magid, the holy, the exalted, the deep, the tremendous. May his memory be a blessing for all of Israel. One day, the rabbi of a city, maybe Chenstochov, came to him and he said, "Holy Rabbi, I'm married for 18 years. God has not blessed us yet with children. Please, Holy Rabbi, Holy Master, pray for us. Bless us with children." And the Koznitz the Magid closed his holy eyes and said to him, "My dear friend, I'm sorry. All the gates of heaven are closed." And the rabbi of Chesterfield began to cry. And he knew what it means to leave this world without children. He says, "Rebbe, I can't believe that nobody in the world can open the gates of heaven." Koznitz the Magid said to him, "My dear Rabbi, do you know by any chance in your city there is a Yidele by the name Schwarze Wolf? Schwarze Wolf, the most obnoxious Jew in the whole city. Disgusting, vulgar. Nobody wants to talk to him. When he walks into shul, everybody moves away." "Yes, it's him. He is the head of the 36th Tzaddikim. In his hands is heaven and earth. If you can get invited by him for one Shabbat, and he can bless you, he's the only one, he's the only one for whom all the gates of heaven are open." You know, friends, what it means to go to Lamed Vov Tzaddik, the holy of holiest, the deepest of the deep. So the rabbi of Chenstrov came home, he prepared himself, he recited the Psalms, and Mamash repented, and he promised God everything in the world. The Schwarze Wolf lives in the forest. He's a wood chopper. So he thought, the only way of being really making sure I'm invited for Shabbos, I knock on his door 2 minutes before Shabbos, I'll tell him I got lost in the forest and he has to invite me. 2 minutes before Shabbos, the Yidele, this rabbi, knocks on the door of the Schwarze Wolf. "And here, my dear friends, I want you to concentrate in the deepest way. You know, the Lamed Vov Tzaddikim are so holy and so real. They are absolutely your mirror. If you look at them and they look obnoxious, because you're obnoxious. If you look at them and you think they're ugly, Gewalt, are you ugly? If you look at them and you see how holy they are, because you are so holy. So, the rabbi of Chenstrom knocks on the door of the Schwarze Wolf, and the most ugly woman in the world, obnoxious really, with the most vulgar language, the most disgusting curses, opens the door and curses him out before she even talks to him. And he says, "Please invite me for Shabbos. I'm lost in the forest. I can't make it back to the city anymore. And let me not tell you what she said." He says, "Please, please, please." And she tries to slam the door in his face. He's very fast. He puts his foot in the door. He has a look in the house, and those children, really, he has never seen such obnoxious looking children. And usually children look beautiful, but they're terrible. But you know what? He knows it's him. Gewalt, is he far away? Gewalt, Gewalt, is he far away? She says to him, listen, my dear friend, if my husband comes home and he finds you here, you'll never see daylight again. He will kill you with his own hands. The only thing I can suggest to you, if you want to stay in the stable, we have a horse there. Just do your thing and don't dare opening the door to our house. For all cases, he had two candles with him and a little challah and fish. And you know, sweetest friends, obviously the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim don't go to shul. I hate to say bad things, but some of the shuls are really, you know, I can understand why the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim don't daven there. But the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim have their own minion. Late, late at night, the Schwarze Wolf came home and he could hear the heavy steps. He could hear him talking to his wife. The door opens, and if the Schwarze Wolf ever looked gruesome, it was that night. It was frightening. He walks up to him and he says to him, listen, my dear brother, if you dare opening the door to my house, I'm killing you with my own hands. And 1 second after Shabbos, I want you to disappear from my stable. Slams the door. To make it very short, sweetest friends, open your hearts again. He couldn't sleep Friday night. Can you imagine Schwarze Wolf is next door? All he needs is one blessing. And he can't go in. Shabbos morning early, he heard the Schwarze Wolf going back to daven in the forest. Late afternoon, he came back. He's trying to do tshuva, he's thinking, Rabbi Shem, I promise you, but there comes a point he doesn't have anything to say to God anymore. And it's getting later and later. Suddenly he looks out of the window of the stable. There are 3 stars on the sky. Shabbos is over. And he knows my life is over. It looks to me, God forbid, I'll never have children. But suddenly he remembered there is one more who can open all the gates. There is somebody somewhere so close and so far, who can do everything. He fell to the ground, and for the first time in his life, he mamish prayed to God, please let me have children. At that moment, he felt the softest hand on your head, on his head. He looked up, it was a Schwarze Wolf, shining like the high priest on Yom Kippur. And I said to him, my dearest, sweetest friend, come in and join me for Shalosh Shudas, for the third me here. And whatever the Rabbi of Chenstuchov thought the Holy Beis Hamikdash would look like, believe me, the house of the Schwarze Wolf was even more holy. And the wife of the Schwarze Wolf, who looked so ugly yesterday, she was so exquisitely beautiful. and the children goes without saying. They were all little high priests. And the Schwarze Wolf says, I know what you came for, and I bless you to have a son. I have only one request. Please call him Schwarze Wolf after me. And you know, his first reaction was, but you're alive, how can I call my son after you when you're alive? But the awe was no time to ask. After Havdalah he left, went home to his wife, and he told her, I got the blessing from the Schwarze Wolf. The next morning he goes to shul. After the davening is over, he sees there's a commotion in the synagogue. The shamus walks around, everyone asking everyone for favors, and nobody wants to do it. He calls the shaman and says, what's going on here? He says, oh, somebody died, and just nobody wants to go to the funeral. Well, he says, who died? The Schwarze Wolf. The Holy of Holiest. The deepest of the deep. The most precious of all precious. The shaman says nobody wants to go to the funeral. Gewalt. He ran up to the beam and he yelled from the deepest depths of his being, Yidden. Do you know who he was? Do you know that he was the head of the Lama Dov Tzaddikim? That he was Mamish, the holiest person of our generation? We never said good Shabbos to him. We never gave him an aliyah. We laughed at him. Listen to me, friends. This was 180 years ago. A long time after. Many tears after. A lot of Jewish blood after. 1944, the Holy Rebbe of Belz came to this holy land. And the first Shabbos in Tel Aviv, everybody knows in Belz, people put bottles of wine and beer on the table. Everybody gets a glass of wine. You walk up to the rabbi, tell him your name and your father's name or your mother's name, and the rabbi blesses you. There was an old yidele, very old yidele, and two people were holding him. He made his way to the Belz rabbi, and the Belz rabbi says to him, "My Tyra Zisa Yid, my precious brother, what is your name?" And he says, my name is Schwarze Wolf, Ben Chana. The Belz Rebbe says to him, are you the grandson of the first Schwarze Wolf who was called after the Lamed Wolf Tzaddik? And he says, Rebbe, you know the story? And the Belz Rebbe says, yes, Heiliger Schwarze Wolf. I know the story, but nobody ever will remember unless you do me a favor. And he said to the Yidden, please lift up this old Yidele. He was maybe 100 years old. Lift him up and sit him on the table. Let him tell all the Yidden who are here. So in order that the story should be remembered. You know, my most darling friends, I had the privilege of hearing the story from a person who was the first Friday night in Belz. This is not the end yet. 5 years ago, 5 years ago, I had the privilege of giving a concert in Ohel Shem in Tel Aviv. And out of nowhere, I remembered the story of the Schwarze Wolf, and I told the story to the people. suddenly in the last row, in the last row, somebody begins to wave his hand, and he says to the people, I want you to know, I want you to know, there's a little boy in my class in Bnei Brak. His name is Schwarze Wolf, and he is named after his Elter, Elter Zede, the Schwarze Wolf, who told the story to the Belzer Rebbe. Good Shabbos, good Yom Tov, good Yom Tov, good Shabbos. I'm begging you, please promise me, keep on telling the story. Keep on remembering the Schwarze Wolf. You know, sweetest friends in Yerushalayim, do you know how many Schwarze Wolves are walking around on the street? And I always know inside of me, when you walk in Yerushalayim, you might see some real obnoxious people. You never know. Never know.
Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, master storyteller, and yeah, it's just what I just discovered. I've heard this story before, I've played it before, and this is the first time that I realized he's talking about the Belzer Rebbe. That is my family. I'm a descendant of the Belzer Rebbe, and I never heard that before. I'm just totally blown away. It's unbelievable. So my father is a Rokeach, and the Rokeach family are of the Belzer Rebbe. So it's a Hasidic dynasty, and I grew up, you know, hearing this, and only as an adult am I beginning to, little by little, understand a little bit of what that might mean. So I'm going to share something else from Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach. Here on the voice mobile.
Yeah.
So I just also noticed that in Brooklyn, Shlomo Carlbach's daughter, Neshama, just received an award, which she accepted in the merit of her father, who, of course, was her biggest influence. And that was very sweet. Somebody posted that, which was great. So because we're talking about stories, I want to share something. Another passing, Yaffa Eliach, the voice of Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, the pioneering scholar who died last week at 79, showed American Jewry the way to memory. This is by Menachem Butler, November 15th, in the Tablet, which is an online magazine. I'll just share some of it. The New York Times assessment of Professor Yaffa Eliach, the elegant doyen of Holocaust research, who passed away at the age of 79, was that she captured faces of the Holocaust. The headline recognized Eliach's towering photographic exhibition of her childhood village, Aishishok, which has been on permanent display at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington since the museum opened in 1993. What it missed was that we have lost one of our greatest storytellers of the Holocaust. During her more than half century of leadership, teaching, and writing, Eliach created a unique space for survivors to tell their story to their own children and students. Her approach of interviewing survivors and collecting testimony preceded Yale's Archive for Holocaust Testimony by more than a decade. Her detailed Holocaust Oral History Manual, with hundreds of specific questions and guidance on how to ask, provided a theoretical and practical structure for oral history projects and has aided museums and research centers around the world to study the Holocaust and other global genocides. Well, it goes into a lot more detail, but she had a lot of difficulty in the beginning getting funding. There were competing ideas about how things should be done, but she persisted. And she says her only regret is that due to limited resources, the center's interviews number only in the thousands, not in the tens of thousands of interviews recorded by survivors, liberators, and others in the prime years of their lives. With the passing of this dedicated scholar, whose graceful and unpretentious efforts to listen to and record the personal voices of the Holocaust victims opened a gate of memory that might otherwise have been forced shut by the weight of tremendous pain, fear, and sorrow, it is left to us to continue her sacred mission. Menachem Butler is the writer of this article, a contributing editor at Tablet Magazine, and a special advisor for Jewish law projects at the Julius Rabinowitz Program on Jewish and Israeli Law at the Harvard Law School, and a co-editor at Sforum Blog. You can follow him on Twitter at MyStender. So that was it's a fairly long article, so I just wanted to make note of her passing. There are many things we want to get into to share today, but that was one of them. We'll go now to some more music here on the voicemobile at WMFO. Wow, that's so cool. Eitan Katz is the son of Shlomo Katz, who I referenced earlier at the beginning of the program. I have to give, I normally don't do this, but I have to give a shout out to my students over at the Andrews Middle School because they're so sweet today. At the often they will ask me, will I sing? And it depends on what's going on. But I did, and so it really lifted my spirits. That was so sweet of them to ask. So, and you know, sometimes I'll join on along with some of the Nigunim, the songs, and you should too if it moves you. It just lifts your spirits. It's wonderful. So there's a very interesting article that I want to share with you at this point. It's by Gerald S. Auerbach, and it's titled A Boy's Discovery Rebuts Temple Mount Revisionism. Palestinians deny Jewish roots at the holy site, but a newly unearthed artifact confirms historical truths. A 10-year-old Russian boy, Matvey Tepliaev, recently made an extraordinary discovery in Jerusalem. Working as a volunteer in the Temple Mount Sifting Project, he found a 3,000-year-old seal, engraved limestone about the size of a thimble, with a hole at one end so it could be hung from a string, from the time of King David. The artifact was nestled in the hundreds of tons of earth and rock that had been illegally excavated from below the Temple Mount in the late 1990s by the Muslim Waqf, a trust that retains authority over the contested site. The Temple Mount is sacred ground for Jews, it says Muslims and Christians, I contest that, but Jewish historical claims are denied by many Muslims and recently denied by UNESCO. The sifting project in Emek Tsurim National Park in Jerusalem started in 2005 and has uncovered several historically significant objects, but the seal may be the most important. Dating from the era of King David's conquest of Jerusalem and the building of the Jewish first temple by his son and successor Solomon. The seal confirms the ancient Jewish presence in Jerusalem more than a millennium before the Muslim Dome of the Rock was built above the ruins of the ancient temples. If it is ironic that the Muslim excavation undertaken to build an underground mosque ultimately confirmed Jews' historical claims, it is no less ironic that the fact that the Waqf came to rule the site at Israel's instigation, following Israel's extraordinary victory over its Arab foes in the Six-Day War in June 1967, which included capturing the entire city of Jerusalem, Israel Colonel Mota Gur proclaimed, "The Temple Mount is in our hands." Joyous Israeli soldiers gathered at the western wall below and sang HaTikvah, the national anthem. Shlomo Goren, a brigadier general and future chief rabbi of Israel, exultantly blew his shofar. But Defense Minister Moshe Dayan had other ideas about Jewish sovereignty on the Temple Mount. A secular Israeli, he relied on a rabbinical consensus that Jews were forbidden to set foot on the mount lest they risk desecrating the unknown site of the Holy of Holies, the inner sanctuary of the Jewish temple that housed the Ark of the Covenant. After declaring that we have reunited the city, the capital of Israel, never to part it again, Dayan met with Muslim leaders inside the Dome of the Rock. An agreement was reached. The Waqf bans on Jews visiting the Temple Mount would be ended, even if many preferred to continue to observe the rabbinical prohibition, but Jews wouldn't be allowed to pray there. Shakespeare, not the Bible or Quran, proclaimed, "What's past is prologue." Dayan's concession prepared the way for conflict on the Temple Mount that continues today. The Palestinian Second Intifada erupted in September 2000 after Likud leader Ariel Sharon visited the Temple Mount, not to pray, but to assert the legitimacy of a Jewish presence at the most ancient Jewish holy site. He was widely castigated for asserting a historical truth. A similarly tragic scenario is now unfolding in Jerusalem and throughout Israel as Palestinians attack Jews with bullets, knives, and rocks. Although Secretary of State John Kerry absurdly attributed the bloody rampage to Palestinians' frustration with Israeli settlement building, informed observers note that the outbreak of violence had been stoked by false rumors that Israel is on the verge of rewriting the Temple Mount rules, including allowing Jews to pray there. This may or may not be a prelude to a third intifada. What is clear is that for years, the Muslim Waqf has continued to oversee excavations below the surface of the Temple Mount with callous disregard for what archaeologists could learn about the Mount's Jewish history in antiquity. That policy is of a piece with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's dismissal of any Jewish connection to the Temple Mount. Al-Aqsa is ours, and so is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. They have no right to desecrate them with their filthy feet. That's a quote from Abbas. Mr. Abbas told activists on an October 14th meeting in his Ramallah office, the Jerusalem Post reported. Not that Jews ever doubted their religious roots at Temple Mount, but now they have a 10-year-old boy to thank for providing them with a 3-millennia-old artifact that refutes modern propaganda designed to rewrite history, just as the seal was used long ago as evidence of authority, so today it puts a stamp of approval on Jewish claims to their history at the holiest site in Jerusalem. I should tell you what the Muslims do there. They picnic, they play ball, they totally have no respect for the site at all. And when they pray facing Mecca with their behinds to Jerusalem. So there you have it. That's not what the media will tell you, but that's what it is. So we'll go back to some music here on the voicemobile at WMFO. You can go to our website, wmfo.org, and you can click on Wednesday 3 to 5. You can live stream the broadcast. It's archived. You can go there at another time. You can also find other shows here at WMFO you might like to enjoy.
Hit him up, Unganga, it was an insult, Lalingum. Hit him up, Unganga, it was an insult, Lalingum. Hit him up, Unganga, it was an insult, Lalingum. Uncle Lim Chateau. Uncle Lim Chateau, woman and his island. Uncle Lim Chateau, woman and his island. See, God is a man, I'm gonna make you feel.
That's great. Yidan Rachel Project. And the song is Siashaya Ignoma, Sing Out for Love. And we need that. We definitely need that. So here's an article by Hillel Fendel from the 15th, yesterday. Sanhedrin to Trump and Putin. Fulfill Cyrus-like role in Jerusalem. With the two top world leaders supporting Jewish right to Jerusalem, Sanhedrin asked that they build the third temple. Eyeing what appears to be a twice-in-history opportunity, the organization called the Sanhedrin, which is the court in was the ancient biblical court and it's now been reconstituted, has called on U.S. President-elect Donald Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin to join forces in an attempt to renew to back the rebuilding of the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. The Sanhedrin is an attempt to review the glorious Great Court, the same name from the last Jewish kingdom some 2,000 years ago. Professor Rabbi Hillel Weiss, spokesman for the Sanhedrin, said, "The political conditions today, in which the two most important national leaders in the world support the Jewish right to Jerusalem as their spiritual heritage, is historically unprecedented." He said that the election of Donald Trump, who has promised to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, coupled with Putin's expressed desire for the temple's rebuilding, prompted the Sanhedrin to send a letter to both leaders. The letter proposes that they act jointly, as did King Cyrus of Persia 2,500 years ago, and show most practically that they recognize the importance of Israel and the Holy Temple. "We are poised to rebuild the temple," Weiss said. Trump's support for Israel and for the relocation of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem is well known, and many of his close aides are similarly strong supporters of Israel. Less well known is Putin's support for the Holy Temple. As the Sanhedrin writes in his letter, Putin paid a late night visit to the Kotel, the Western Wall, in 2012 during his third official trip to Jerusalem. Upon his arrival, the former KGB agent who became the leader of Russia stood in silent prayer for several minutes, after which he read Psalms from a Russian Hebrew prayer book. At one point, an Israeli bystander called out in Russian, "Welcome, President Putin." Putin then approached the man, who explained the importance of the Temple Mount and the Jewish temple. Putin reportedly responded, "That's exactly the reason I came here, to pray for the temple to be built again." The Sanhedrin sent a letter at the time to Putin, calling on him to act to fulfill his prayer. President Putin did not respond. But the Sanhedrin hopes he will respond to the current letter, now that he has a potential ally for the project in the United States leadership. Basing himself on biblical passages and rabbinic tradition, Rabbi Weiss explained that the leaders of Russia and America can lead the nations of the world to global peace through building the temple, the source of peace. Supporting the Jewish claim to Jerusalem would bring benefit to Russia and America, as well as the entire world, he said. Pretty stunning. I didn't know that about Putin. That is totally amazing. Okay, let's see, where are we going now? I think to this one. Wally Brill and the Covenant. Okay, so we lost another giant in terms of music and poetry. Leonard Cohen passed away 4 days ago. He was a hugely influential singer and songwriter whose work spanned nearly 50 years. He died Monday at the age of 82. His label, Sony Music Canada, confirmed his death on the singer's Facebook page Thursday evening. It is with profound sorrow we report that legendary poet, songwriter, and artist Leonard Cohen has passed away. The statement read, "We have lost one of music's most revered and prolific visionaries." And they talked about a memorial taking place in L.A. at a later date. It's, "My father passed away peacefully at his home in Los Angeles with the knowledge that he had completed what he felt was one of his greatest records." Cohen's son Adam wrote in a statement to Rolling Stone, "He was writing up until his last moments with his unique brand of humor." Now, I was fortunate enough to go to a concert 3 years ago on his last tour. It was at the Wang Center, and it was stunning. Of course, he was much older than when I had seen him earlier, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But what was so striking, besides the beautiful music, was that he was on his knees almost every other second. He was bowing in prayer. It was stunning to see. I mean, he was already, I think, frail. Not as frail as he became, and you know, that was 3 years earlier. But those of you who have been listening to the Voicemobile over the years may know that I was at the Isle of Wight in 1970. I went over and lived in England for 3 years, and one of the first things that I did, I had come back from being in Morocco to attend the Isle of Wight, and I ended up being backstage and having several amazing encounters, one of which was being on the stage when Leonard Cohen performed. I had always loved his music, and so, you know, I was in a position back there to talk to somebody who was his manager, and I said that I always wanted to sing with him, and he said, "Okay, go ahead." I mean, it was like, what? Oh my gosh. So there I am standing next to his backup singers, and of course, I wasn't opening my mouth because I was scared to death, and he gave me this big smile and is like, "Go ahead, do it." So there it was. There I am on the stage with Leonard Cohen. And it was, you know, just beyond belief. So I think the song was Suzanne. So, and I'm going to play a